Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, March 29th. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back our favorite dietitian nutritionist, Nicole Rodriguez, today to help us think about ways we can eat healthier with less waste and more taste. If you want to join the conversation or ask Nicole a question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, and the number, it's a call-in show. Sure, give us a call. 800-348-2551. Nicole Rodriguez, delicious, nutritious food, coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today, joining us is our friend, Nicole Rodriguez. Nicole is an award-winning dietitian nutritionist based in the New York metro area. In addition to serving a diverse clientele via her telehealth-based practice, she is an advocate for agriculture. Nicole is passionate about empowering individuals to feel good about the abundance of food choices at their fingertips. She co-hosts a really cool podcast called Food Bullying. She has a great website, Enjoy Food, Enjoy Life. It's great to have her on the program. We'll talk about some cool stuff today. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Nicole Rodriguez, how the heck are you?
Happy Friday, Ray Graff. I'm excellent. How are you?
Probably not as good as you, but I'm all right. You know.
Maybe by the end of the day, it'll be a different answer.
Catch me around 10 o'clock tonight. I'll be real, real good.
Perfect.
Well, it's great to have you back. What have you been up to?
Well, it's March, tail end of March here.
Yep.
And did you know that's National Nutrition Month?
I did. Believe it or not, I did not
know
that.
No, you don't have your calendar marked.
No, I did not know that. So what do you do?
So here we are, National Nutrition Month. Also, Frozen Foods Month. Both
really?
Of those things going on in March.
So
yeah.
How do you mix the two? You got frozen foods. They have a certain, some people look askance at them. I know you don't. But how do you mix National Nutrition Month with Frozen Food Month?
I think those two things mix actually quite beautifully together. And, you know, as you mentioned, Ray, some people look askance, as you said, at the frozen foods aisle, and it's really erroneous. And what you might or might not know is that when a food is frozen, and we can talk about the ones that are, you know, more nutrient dense and that we should maybe be thinking about incorporating every day, but even some of the less nutrient dense ones that can be drivers for other nutrient dense foods in other parts of the supermarket, when they're frozen, there's nothing added to them. It's really just the freezing process that preserves them, which is pretty amazing.
I think what people, and believe it or not, most of us are not dietitians or nutritionists, but most of us believe, or at least have an inkling that, okay, you freeze it and you lose nutrition. You lose those nutrients.
That is a common misconception. And if we're looking at specifically the examples of fruits and vegetables, and you know every time I come on the show, Ray, I have to remind you that we're in this fruit and vegetable consumption crisis in the United States. Only 1 in 10 of us are getting enough of those things that we should be getting every day, specifically fruits and vegetables, right? So if we're looking at something, say, let's look at strawberries, raspberries, blueberries. You buy them in the store fresh this time of year. How are they?
Well, the ones we got recently were very good, but I see your point.
Yeah.
They can be a little tough at this time of year.
They could leave something to be desired, whereas when fruits and vegetables are frozen, they are picked at peak ripeness, and then the flash freezing process locks those nutrients in. So not only is it sometimes the more nutrient-dense bet, but from a flavor perspective, it's more appealing. And if stuff doesn't taste good, we're probably not eating it, right?
Believe it or not, I might not eat the most healthy diet most of the time, so I don't really have this answer. How much fruit do you need to get all the nutrients you need a day?
Such a great question. So, you know, these days we're just encouraging everyone to have a plant with every meal, meaning have some kind of fruit or vegetable or both at every meal. But the, you know, the guidance remains largely the same. We want those 3+ servings of vegetables a day and usually 2 servings of fruits per day. If we can roughly follow those guidelines, then we're in pretty good shape.
Are there any vegetables that are really overrated? I mean, does celery have any nutritional value?
You know, celery packs a lot of vitamin J, and I think that's...
Vitamin J? Wait a minute, you're making up vitamins now?
J for joy. We need the crunch and all of those good things. So does celery have a ton of vitamin content as opposed to something that's like, say, a really dark leafy green? They don't really quite stack up, but there's still a lot of water content in celery, some vitamins, and there's still value and fiber in celery as well. So it does have its place if that's something that you like to eat.
Not particularly. You know, I watch a lot of late night TV, and lately, you know, these ads, oh, I got fruit in a jar and I got veggies in a jar, and they're little pills. You take X number of them a day. Can, I know I've asked you this before about vitamins and such, but can you actually get the nutrients? It's like the Jetsons. You take pills. Is it enough nutritionally to have some of these supplements? Do they do anything?
If only it were that easy, right? I think we'd all just be taking encapsulated fruits and vegetables.
Yes.
But when, you know, when we think logically about some of those statements, and again, all of these different supplements are unregulated. It's like the wild, wild west out there in supplement land. So if we think logically, thinking the fruit and vegetable servings that I just stated are what are recommended and how many cups that is, and we think of that volume and we think of how are we condensing that into a couple of capsules a day. And so the answer is really no. And it's not just about the vitamins and minerals that are in our fruits and vegetables, but in tablet and pill form, we're losing fiber. We're losing other potential phytonutrients, you know, just a fancy word for nutrients found in plants that are not going to be able to be encapsulated. So not really the greatest bet as far as getting what we need for our bodies. We definitely want to take that foods first approach and focus on some big habits.
We're joined today by nutritionist, dietitian Nicole Rodriguez. The website is Enjoy Food, Enjoy Life. And if you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Feel free to email if you wish, and that's voxpop@wamc.org. All right, we talked about it being the end of Frozen Foods Month. And then, okay, the nutrition we talked about, there's plenty of nutrition to be had in frozen foods, and there's not a lot of great fruits and veggies in the Northeast that are fresh at this time, unless you have hydroponics and a hothouse or whatever. So a lot of people eat frozen vegetables and stuff. Then there's this business, and I don't know what's on the list, but you have the Dirty Dozen. So you can run down what the Dirty Dozen is. But when these foods are frozen, are they clean of all those things? Because that would be, that would, are they?
Yeah.
Okay, explain.
Yeah, so fruits and vegetables are not going directly from, you know, like the orchard or the ground and just frozen and put into a bag. Of course, they're being rinsed with water, just like we would at home with our fresh fruits and vegetables, right? So that process is happening. And, you know, on that note, there's a lot of misinformation going around about how should we be washing our vegetables. And I've been asked several times by patients this week, do I need baking soda or do I need some kind of fruit wash that I've seen at the stores?
Hold it.
So,
hold it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll
America
pause there.
Is wonderful capitalist land, and there's always opportunity. There's such a thing as fruit wash.
There are many different varieties of fruit washes that you can buy. Sure.
The mind boggles.
And then there's, you know, there's some guidance. Oh, should I be washing my fruits and vegetables in vinegar? So from the perspective of pure cleanliness, and that means getting rid of dirt and getting rid of pesticide residues and things like that, we really just want to be washing our fruits and vegetables in cool running water. And in some cases, we want to take a scrub brush, right, to something like a carrot or a potato, something that might have a little bit more dirt on it. That makes sense. But we don't need to be using anything special to be washing our produce.
Nicole Rodriguez is our guest today, dietitian, nutritionist. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. So what's on the Dirty Dozen, and why is it called that?
Yes.
You kind of winced when I said that. Why?
Yeah, I wince pretty hard about it every year. So what the Dirty Dozen list is, there's a group called the Environmental Working Group, and they come up with this list every year. And it's supposedly the fruits and vegetables that have the highest pesticide residue on them. And then they put this list out in an effort to discourage people from consuming conventionally grown produce and encouraging people to buy organic produce. And this is problematic for a few different reasons. So one, they're only testing conventionally grown produce, and they're only testing for types of pesticides, not amounts. And it kind of furthers this misconception that organic produce is somehow grown without pesticides, which is not the case. Organic produce can be grown with a number of different pesticides. So this is out there for a couple of months. People will be kind of scared. Number one on the list is always strawberries.
Why?
Spinach, because that might have the most types of pesticides on it. So a really cool tool that you can use if you think for some reason that pesticide residues are a concern for you. It's called safefruitsandveggies.com. They have a pesticide residue calculator, and you can go in and enter, what are you? Are you a grown man? Are you a child? And pick from any of these different fruits and vegetables, and it will tell you how many servings of a particular fruit or vegetable you would have to consume in a day, assuming, furthermore, that particular fruit or vegetable tested for the highest amount of pesticides allowable. And I think you'd be really, really surprised to see how little of a concern pesticide residues really and truly are.
Interesting. Now, we talked about washing vegetables.
Yeah.
Can pesticides be washed off? Or are they embedded in the actual fibers of the veggies and fruit?
Right. So that's a surface situation.
It is.
Right.
So always.
when we're washing, or I should say when we're rinsing, we're reducing our consumption of that greatly. And that's the general guidance. Wash your, worry less, eat more fruits and vegetables, and wash your produce. If you have a sink and you can do that instead of worrying about all of these other things that probably should not be taking up space in your mind.
Nicole Rodriguez is our guest. We didn't know we were going to get on this topic, but we talked about washing fruit and vegetables for a while now. So let's take a break and just catch our breath. The action is hot and heavy. 800-348-2551. You got a nutrition question? You got a diet question? Give us a shout. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Thad Jones, Frank West on our bumper music here. It's Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Nicole Rodriguez is our guest, an award-winning dietitian, nutritionist. You know, what were you just... You were communicating through the glass with Barb King, who's our call screener. What were you doing?
So Barb went to safefruitsandveggies.com, and she utilized the pesticide residue calculator to see how many servings of carrots she would have to eat in a day before pesticide residues are of any health concern. She would have to eat 18,000 servings of carrots in one day.
I don't think I'll get that in my entire life.
Maybe that's the challenge to you. Can I get to 18,000 servings before I die?
Yes, well, at this point, who knows? The number here is 800-348-2551. Nicole Rodriguez is our guest. This email from Paul and Rhinebeck before we hit the phones. Could you please comment on the long-term health risks associated with added sugars? More specifically, could you talk about processed foods? And that's from Paul and Rhinebeck.
Yeah, so we have a couple of different things going on there. So it's really difficult to go in and say X nutrient or X added this or that is the major contributor to X disease. What we do know is that obesity is a risk factor for a lot of different diseases, right? So we know that when we're putting ourselves into a caloric surplus and carrying excess body fat, and being largely like metabolically unhealthy, that can lead to a host of different diseases, right? So as far as sugar consumption, what are we really talking about? What are we really looking at? Are you keeping your discretionary calories in check? So I'll say, for example, and I'm not saying go and count your calories necessarily, but if you know that you are roughly consuming 2,000 calories a day, are you conserving only about 10% of those calories for added sugars? Is that your fun calorie allotment? Then you're probably in an okay space, given that the rest of your health is in order. You're sleeping well, you're hydrated, you're exercising. So looking at the big picture, real sugar can most definitely fit into an overall balanced meal plan. Are we going overboard? Is that becoming more like 30 to 40% of what we're eating in a day? I certainly hope not. But again, if we're keeping our added sugars in check, then we can include them.
All right. You know, it's no secret. I like a little sugar now and again. What does it do? Why do you get that little rush?
Well, it's glucose hitting your bloodstream. And if we're just having it by itself, then that hits fast in the absence of fiber, in the absence of protein and fat. So we get that. We can get that little jump, but there's also a mental association with that, right? Like you expect that little jump in.
And so maybe, it's a placebo?
And maybe you feel that a little bit too. Yeah. So it's, you know, a couple of different things potentially going on there aside from the actual biomechanics of it. And we're both glancing at we have
you
some.
You brought Girl Scout cookies.
I did. I brought just a little bit of sugar. But that's why things like serving sizes can help us out too.
So that's one serving, right?
Right.
Four boxes.
Yeah, but can four boxes plus a devil dog?
I forgot about the devil dog. So listen, you just said something very interesting, that we expect that sugar rush. So theoretically, then, I could con myself or psych myself into getting a similar sort of a euphoric feeling from carrots if I work hard enough at it. When you, in your job, and you have a lot of clients, you do telehealth and walk-in, I assume, or are you all telehealth now down in the city?
I do see some people in person, but mostly telehealth. Yeah.
Now, there has to be a psychological component to all this. Do you ever have to bring in a shrink and say, all right, help me out here?
Well, I look at every patient as a whole person and not just as a person who's eating and not just someone who I have to, you know, advise on with their food. So are there instances where maybe that's a suggestion? Yes, but I will say that a lot of my patients already are under the guidance of a mental health practitioner in conjunction with myself.
No, I don't
as a
say
dietitian.
That. I don't say that flippantly. I mean that part of changing your life, the way you eat. And it's not like you don't go on a diet for a month or 2 months or a year and then expect to go back to the way it was in order for it to work, right?
Sure.
Am I wrong? You have to make a change for good.
And you have to be ready for it.
Okay. So there's a psychological component to all this. How do you play that?
Yeah, for sure. So it's all about, and it's about me meeting people where they are, of course, but it's also about being realistic about your own level of readiness for change, right? So if you're just maybe thinking about it, maybe you're not quite ready. You have to be at the point where you've really come to grips with the fact that you need a change, that you want to make a change, that you're ready to do the work to make the change, because it is work. It is a tremendous amount of work. Sometimes people will start working with me and say, "Oh, I did Weight Watchers once and it was kind of easy and I gained all the weight back, but I thought maybe this would be kind of similar, but I'm working really hard." And I do. I make people work really hard on lifestyle changes. But I also want to go back, if you don't mind, Ray, for a moment to that psychological component and the expectation of sugar and what does it mean if I'm like, "Oh, I want sugar. I would say this applies more to the women that I work with. They'll come to me and say, "Oh, I just crave sugar at night." And when we do a little backtracking into the rest of their day, what is sugar? It's a form of carbohydrate, right?
Yeah.
So if I look back at your day and one, you're skipping breakfast, two, there is no carbohydrate at lunch, and then there's no carbohydrate at dinner, and you quantify that as I've been quote unquote so good, because for some reason we demonize carbohydrates in this society, thanks to, you know, books like Wheat Belly and Brain Grain. People suddenly thought carbohydrates were the devil, Atkins, right? And that's kind of lingered. But when you deny your body carbohydrate all day, then yes, at nighttime you will want sugar, and you might not be reaching for complex carbohydrates and things that have fiber in them. You might just want the pure sugar because you've denied your body that sugar all day long. So something else as far as that psychological component, something to think about.
So this is from Anonymous. Wants to know if you're being sponsored or paid by any of the organizations. Girl Scout Cookies is a brand. Are you being paid by the Girl Scouts?
No, I'm not being paid by the Girl Scouts, but I am a Girl Scout troop leader and cookie mom. And boy, do I wish I was paid for that, because it is a tremendous amount of work for the past 2 months.
I've done that. And I got to tell you, you did way better than we did with our daughters. The number here is 800-348-2551. This email, we're going to go to the phones in a second. Hang in there. Alex in Glenville, talk to me about tofu. Is it actually good for you? Seems too processed to be actually good. Should I try making it myself, if that's even possible? Also, is it a climate-friendly choice? And that's from Alex in Glenville.
That's a great question. Tofu, edamame, seitan, all of those are really excellent protein choices that also incorporate fiber into them. And you know what? All foods are processed to some extent, right? So is tofu considered a processed food? Sure. Is peanut butter considered a processed food? Yeah. Does not mean that they're not super nutrient dense and really, really valuable. So I would say, one, yes, incorporate tofu into your diet if that's something that you enjoy. I think tofu, what's really great about it is that it's sort of a blank canvas in
it
a way.
It really is.
And I used to despise it because of that. And now I really embrace it myself and have my patients doing the same. You can, if you eat eggs, you can scramble it into eggs to reduce your egg intake, right? You can get a lot of protein and fiber from the tofu and mix it in. Tofu's great in an air fryer. Tofu is awesome mixed into different stews and other things where you just might need that little boost of protein and fiber. As far as it being a climate friendly choice, I have to be honest, I'm not super aware of what the carbon footprint of tofu is as opposed to some other choices.
But it's soybeans, right?
Yeah, it's soy. And there's a lot of I think there's like a lot of gray area as far as plant-based proteins versus animal-based proteins and what are the different trade-offs from global climate perspective too.
Nicole Rodriguez is our guest today, an award-winning dietitian, nutritionist. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Ann in Lenox. Ann, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two questions, one really short and the other a little maybe more complex.
Okay.
I wanted to know if we should wash mushrooms. But some chefs go berserk if you wash them. A friend of mine years ago used to sell horse manure to people who grew mushrooms, so she was very adamant about washing them. So that's my question.
That's an interesting
question. Yeah, that's a great question. So we do want to wash them. It's just a slightly different process. So instead of submerging them or rinsing them, they're a little bit more labor intensive, and the guidance is to take a damp cloth or some damp paper towel and go through each mushroom and basically polish each one, basically go through and remove the dirt with a soft cloth or some damp kitchen towel, and in that way you're not compromising the texture of the mushroom, but you are removing the dirt. That's a great question.
All right, Ann, you got a second part to this.
Okay. Yeah, the other part was, and you may have just covered this a minute ago, I have had very good luck on a keto diet, and I wondered if that, staying on that or kind of living by that, is dangerous.
Keto.
Yeah, so I don't want to say necessarily dangerous, because there are people who do thrive on it. It's a matter of how are you doing keto, because there are people who will do keto and it's bacon and butter and
tell me more.
Right, and all of these things, and their saturated fat intake becomes very high, and then yes, you are putting yourself at risk for heart disease and things like that. So if we're going the other direction and relying more on monounsaturated fats and incorporating the vegetables and things that are allowable on that diet and making our protein choices lean, then it can work for some time. I think the issue is, just in my experience of people on keto, that energy levels can be a little bit lower because the carbohydrate is so low. And then moreover, when you do possibly decide to transition off of that diet, it can be really difficult to transition to a healthy meal pattern because, again, you've been avoiding carbohydrates by and large for all this time, and then all of a sudden you have access to them. It could be very, very tempting to go overboard on carbohydrate and maybe, once again, not be choosing the most nutrient-dense ones.
Anne.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks
a lot. Nicole Rodriguez is our guest today, an award-winning dietitian, nutritionist. Have you ever done the keto?
I personally have not. I love my carbohydrates. I know that carbohydrates are just really important in how I want to live my day-to-day life, lifting weights and walking and having energy throughout the day. So it's not something I've experimented with personally.
Are you, are any of your clients, without violating HIPAA or whatever,
sure,
are they in line for calorie counting? Do you count calories?
Some of them do, and some of them do not. Whether or not to be counting calories and tracking macronutrients is highly personalized. And again, going back to that psychological component, for some people it can feel disordered. For some people who are already maybe have experienced a history of eating disorder, it's usually not appropriate. And for a lot of people it can be triggering, so it's not for everybody. But I do have some patients who do religiously count their calories every day and track them every day.
How much calorie is in meat? Like if I have a steak, I don't really think about that. I say, okay, this is carbs to speak of, and this has got to be good, low-cal.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of calorie count in meat?
So it depends on what kind of meat we're talking about. Are we talking about lean meat? Are we talking about fattier cuts?
So there's calories in fat.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, there are calories, so a little quick breakdown, per gram of fat and per gram of protein and carbohydrate, that's 4 calories per gram. And then when we're looking at fat, it's 9 calories per gram. And that's why, we want to keep an eye on the fats that we're consuming on a day-to-day basis.
You've been on this show a lot. Does it surprise you how little I know about these things? It's incredible.
That's why we're here.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Iris, who is in Stone Ridge. Iris, go ahead.
Hi there. Hi. Thank you. This is great. We could have a nutritionist on once a week and never run out of questions.
Right you are.
So my question is, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. My question is about the other reasons to eat organic, because they are, the big picture, you know, you have pesticide exposure for workers, you have surrounding small farmers, they get oversprayed with pesticide, and you have the ecosystem impacts. You know, if it doesn't affect the full-grown adult human, it might affect a frog or a, you know, a butterfly. So I wondered if you could talk about that. And I also have a question if you have time.
All right. Well, go ahead. Comment on that if you wish, Nicole, and then we'll go to the question.
Yeah. Thank you, Iris. I think that there's a big misconception about farmers who are not farming organic, that somehow they're not concerned with the impact they're making on the environment, when just based on the conversations I've had with now dozens of farmers, either, you know, on tours or on my podcast, whether they are growing conventional or using organic practices, farmers are the original stewards of the land, and they care deeply for the environment. They care deeply about leaving whatever land they have better for the next generation. And there are a lot of, you know, different practices in place on both sides that are aimed towards that environmental conservation. And, you know, it takes all different kind of farming practice. It's going to take all different kinds of farming practices to feed the growing population that we're looking at going into 2030, going into 2050. So, you know, so there's that. And again, just because something is grown organic doesn't mean that it's not sprayed with pesticides. And actually, sometimes those pesticides have to be sprayed in a higher concentration because they are weaker, right? So either it might have to be sprayed at a higher concentration, or you might need different varieties. So I think there are trade-offs on both sides, and all of it sort of works together that we could feed everybody.
All right, Iris, we have about 1 minute here before the next break, so go ahead with that question.
Okay, well, I'm really sorry, but I'm just going to mention that I'm working on a case right now where TIAA owns 76,000 acres in Arkansas, and they have sprayed people directly from planes with pesticides. The small farmers that cannot grow any fruit or vegetables anymore because of the pesticides.
Okay.
These, you're probably not talking to the 76,000 acre,
okay,
you know, what we refer to as big ag, toxic ag.
Okay.
You know, that's, sorry, I know we just have a minute, but
yep,
but there is there's a lot of trouble with pesticide overuse in big ag. All right. But I love the small farmers. Love the farmers myself.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot. So that really wasn't a question, but we did take a minute. Let's take a break now. 800-348-2551. It's Nicole Rodriguez. We'll be back. Yeah, baby, some Dutch prog rock there. That's Focus here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. It's Diet and Nutrition Today with Nicole Rodriguez. What's the website again?
EnjoyFoodEnjoyLife.com.
All right, fair enough. And the Food Bullying Podcast. It only took me 4 appearances to remember the name. So there you go.
Here we are.
All right, we'll go back to the phones in a second. Susan writes, container of lettuce, triple washed greens. Do we need to wash them before consuming them?
That's why they're washed, my friend, to save you time. I will say, if we're dealing, can I just give a quick tip on that?
Sure.
If we're buying lettuce in one of those like big plastic clamshell containers, as soon as you get it home, open it up, put some either paper towel or paper napkins on the top, close it and then store it flipped over so that more of the moisture goes towards those paper
Genius.
Towels and then your product stays fresher and longer.
Did
and
you come up with that?
I don't think I did come up with that. It's kind of just like all over the place, but I wanted to pass it on.
I guess I don't move in those circles. Jeff in North Adams, I recently saw a show called Eating You Alive, which covered how bad processed foods and meats are for you and more recommended a whole food plant-based diet. I'm 61, started at around 250 pounds, been doing this diet for 2 weeks, and I've lost 10 pounds. The recipes are simple, filling and delicious. Veggies are more expensive, but have not had any kind of serious cravings, so we'll continue and see what my doctor thinks on my next visit. Well, that sounds great.
That sounds fantastic. I'm all about you eating more fruits and vegetables and lean proteins. That's great.
All right, and then one more email here and then back to the phones. Elise says, how do you really know how much added sugars you're getting when some prepared foods have hidden sugar in them, even in foods you wouldn't expect? For example, I know of one place that adds sugar to its rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, so when we're out and about and we're dining out at a place that does not clearly post the nutrition facts panel, yeah, it's a little bit of a roll of the dice. But right here, I'm looking at a nutrition facts panel, and you'll see that there's total carbohydrate, then there's dietary fiber, followed by total sugars, and then it will say includes, you know, X number of grams of added sugars. So if you're concerned with added sugars or just, you know, we're generally trying to be cognizant of that, right? On the nutrition facts panel, look for the added sugars line, and that will tell you exactly how many grams per serving are in that particular food. Great question.
All right. Let's go back to our phone lines with Nicole Rodriguez. Jim is in Adams, Mass. Jim, go.
Yay, Ray, and yay, Nicole.
Hi.
Hey. Yes, recently, you know, I've been taking these food enzyme supplement pills to help me fully digest my food. I passed my eighth decade birthday back in January.
Happy
you know,
birthday.
And they tell us we have less digestive juices as we age. But I was still getting heartburn and probably a little acid reflux. So I said, well, maybe I'm over-digesting or something, and I stopped taking the food enzyme pills. But then I had a brilliant flashback to the past. I remember our parents, particularly I think it was our dad, said to us, for each bite of food you take, chew it 24 times. I've been chewing my food a lot more thoroughly lately. I'm taking no digestive enzyme pills anymore to supplement.
Interesting.
And no heartburn, no acid reflux.
You know, Jim,
and, you know, well, I'm 80 years old.
I know.
I'm digesting my food on my own. That saliva in our mouth is probably one of the most vital food digestive secretions in the body to help us fully digest our foods.
You know, sometimes when you call in, the guests don't always nod, but Nicole was nodding. So you're a chewer, huh?
I'm in huge agreement with you. Some of us get so caught up in, do I need to eat this? Do I need to eat that? Avoid this, avoid that. And as far as digestion is concerned, you are spot on. Digestion begins both
in the mouth,
chemically and mechanically in the mouth. So if you're having some of these digestive issues, that's one of the first questions I'll ask people. How well are you really chewing your food and giving your body the best, the very best chance to digest it well past the point of your mouth? So, and happy birthday to you, Jim.
Yeah, well, his birthday was a while ago.
But still, past 80,
my grandchildren,
love it. Yep, great tip.
Granddaughter and grandson recently. Many people, I didn't originate this, and many people at different times in history around the world, it all boils down to the same thing. It's six words.
Chew your
food. The closer to nature, the better.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Yeah, I think Jim's 80th birthday was about 4 or 5 months ago, but he is milking it, man.
You know what? When I turn 80, I'm going to milk it like
really?
That, too. Sure.
Yeah,
I think you should if you pass that point, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll see. Let's see if I get there. Let's go to John in Stockbridge. Hello, John. You're on.
Hey there. Well, I'm 76, so I don't know where that line is, but I've been going for it. Recently, and very recently, my blood work has been done, and on two occasions now, my sodium level is low. Now, that's kind of weird because I'm not I'm not a salt addict, but I am, you know, I definitely don't really think about it when I put it on a salad or on an egg or whatever. But I'm wondering, he told me that try drinking less than 54 ounces of water a day.
Interesting.
Now, I'm curious as to what limiting liquid into your system has to do with sodium, if you know. I know you're not a doctor, you're a nutritionist, but maybe you've come across this in your day. I certainly haven't, and nor have a lot of friends I've talked to.
Yeah, right. Sure. So if we're having too much water, we could be urinating out electrolytes. Is that very common? No, but if this is the guidance of your general practitioner, then yes, I would say that he's been following your blood work and is aware, and
yeah,
and that can help preserve some of your blood levels of sodium. So I guess see how that 54 ounce mark works for you, John, and only 4 more years to go for you. We'll be celebrating
you make
your 80th,
it,
too.
Thanks for the call.
Love it.
800-348-2551 is our number. Do you watch salt? Do you watch your salt?
Within some reason, I try to, yeah, but also understand, you know, sometimes we'll look at a food and say, oh, that has so much sodium. And it's like, well, what was the alternative to that food? And I'm going to bring this back to frozen food. So sometimes someone will need something quick. And I might say, well, you know, maybe there's something pre-made in the freezer aisle that'll work nicely for you. And yes, might that be, quote unquote, high in sodium? Sure. But if the fallback is you're doing Chinese takeout or having half of a pizza, then might end up being less sodium in the long run, right?
You don't happen to have half a pizza, do you?
No, just these four boxes of cookies.
They look good. Should I have broken them out? The show's almost over.
I think you should. I think you should.
All right, well, maybe we will. Let's go to Kim Lee in Schenectady. Hello, Kim Lee.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. This is such an important topic to me. I have recently, well, not recently, I've been working on it for most of my life, but I've been doing the program Noom for almost 2 years now. I have tried everything under the sun to lose weight. This is really, for me personally, it's really worked well because for me it's all about my brain more than anything else. And I'm an emotional eater, so, you know, all of that really, really helps. So first off, I'm kind of wondering if you know, what your thoughts are on that. My other thing I wanted to ask you about is I watched a couple documentaries on Netflix about how horrifically our foods are produced and all. It was awful, some of those. But so I'm considering giving it a shot at the vegetarian life, and I'm wondering, I don't know how to use tofu or anything, but wondering if you can recommend a beginner's cookbook.
A beginner's cookbook. Okay.
Yeah. So great questions there. I'll address the topic of Noom first. And, you know, in my opinion,
don't get sued.
The best diet or plan for you is the one that you can adhere to. And it sounds like you've had great adherence and great success with Noom. So if it works for you, fantastic.
Yeah.
For some people, it's Weight Watchers. For some people, it's Noom. For some people, it's, you know, one of those things or something different or my fitness pal. And then doing that in conjunction with working with a registered dietitian. And I think any and all of the above can work if it feels right to you. That's the magic ingredient, like what feels right and
yeah,
what can I do for the long haul. And, you know, I think that behavior change component is what makes some of these programs
so
successful.
Yeah, I finally found
people.
Something that works. I mean, I'm old and I've been overweight since I was a little girl, chubby little girl. So,
well, I'm glad it's working for you. That's important. And then I'll address second mention of Netflix documentaries and just some awareness that the people behind some of these documentaries that we're seeing, that, you know, they have their own interests in some cases.
Yeah.
And of course, the story of people taking, again, the story of people taking care of the environment, the people, you know, leaving it better than they found it. Those stories are not going to sell documentaries, unfortunately. But finding a few bad apples and exposing this, you know, supposed underbelly is going to get a lot of eyes on screen. So I always invite people to utilize their critical thinking skills before putting too much weight in what they see in a documentary.
Well, you make a point. I mean, there are oftentimes, and just because of time limitations, there's parts of stories course. That are left out. So it's
absolutely.
Always good to do your homework on anything that you see.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Absolutely. And, you know, as far as following a more plant-based eating pattern, I will say think more in terms of actual plants, right? So we can be eating quote-unquote plant-based and be eating meat replacements and things like that, or we can have a stronger focus on eating fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and all of those things. And I won't recommend necessarily a cookbook, but I will say fruitsandveggies.org is a really great website for all sorts of different plant-based meals.
Well, thank you for that call. Yes. Let's go now to Troy, New York. And Bill, you're on with Nicole Rodriguez. Go ahead.
Hey, hi. By the way, thank you, Ray, and thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
It's really terrific. I'm sort of looking for a comment. My little bit of knowledge about the prevalence of those kinds of conditions and diseases that lead to chronic kidney disease and the need for dialysis, things like obesity, high blood pressure, pre-diabetes, and again, chronic kidney disease, diabetes, the need for dialysis. Looking at grocery store shelves, I see so much stuff about gluten-free and concern about shown by the kinds of products that are available. Everybody seems to be, not everybody, but many seem to be concerned, and the food manufacturers, processed foods, seem to be concerned about gluten. What about sugar? Earlier in your conversation, you talked a lot about people consuming little or no carbohydrates early in the day and coming around to after dinner craving sweets, and yet it's difficult to find products on the shelves that are sugar-free, maybe use a sugar substitute. I have questions about that and concerns about that, and your comments would be greatly appreciated.
Splendid. Well, we're almost out of time, so you got a couple of minutes here if you want to make some comments. Nicole.
Yeah, I'll address the gluten-free comment first, and unless you have celiac or non-celiac gluten sensitivity, there's probably no reason for you to be avoiding gluten. It's a huge, huge market. But if you're avoiding gluten, you might be missing out on certain things like B vitamins, vitamin D, fiber, iron, because a lot of our gluten-containing foods are fortified, and then we end up missing out a little bit. So it sounds like you're, you know, looking for sweets but not wanting to consume sugars, and there are a wide variety of non-nutritive sweeteners on the market, all of which are tested and are safe for us to consume if that's the route we want to go. So, for example, you'll see various ice creams that are, sugar-free because they have a non-nutritive sweetener in them. You'll see candies and things of that nature. So, you know, that is one route to go. And we're lucky to have all of those options, especially for our diabetic population. So, I mean, if it's in the grocery store and we're following a serving size, then, you know, we're probably okay to
be consuming those
things.
So don't eat a box of sugar-free chocolates.
Exactly.
You may have some unintended results.
Yes, exactly. So let the serving size be your guide, and maybe think back to the rest of your day and your carbohydrate intake and moderating that throughout the day, so maybe we have less of that feeling of craving.
All right.
In the nighttime.
Bill, thanks a lot. Appreciate it very much. And let's go quickly. Now, we only have a minute left with Nicole Rodriguez to Kingston. Marie, you're on.
Hi, I'll make it quick. It has to do with what I've always called acid stomach, and I say that with like air quotes. It's just like a general feeling in your stomach or, you know, your abdomen area of like pressure. And is there like an online resource that you trust to do like, I guess, like an elimination diet to see what is it exactly my body's reacting to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm sorry you're experiencing that. I think the first step would be a consult with a general practitioner and then see if you might want to have a visit with a gastroenterologist. I will say, as far as acid reflux, you know, the general guidance is people avoiding things like tomato, citrus, chocolate, caffeine, peppermint. Those are some of the very specific ones that we might have you avoid. But that is something that we do want to take seriously and probably want to consult with a GI.
Yeah. And Marie, I think we have a gastroenterologist coming on the next week or two or three or four or whatever. So it'll definitely happen again. Appreciate that. A lot of times, if you don't eat too late, too close to bedtime, you're much better off.
And maybe we want to take that 10-minute walk after a meal. I'm just going to put that out there to aid digestion in general after we've chewed very well, of course.
Of course. 37 chews per whatever. All right. So you, Nicole Rodriguez, your website, please.
My website is enjoyfoodenjoylife.com, but I will say I'm most active on Instagram at notoriously.nicole.rd. Hope to see you there. Thanks so much, Ray.
Thanks, as always, and thanks for the Girl Scout cookies.
My pleasure.
And the Double Dog, which is going down real soon. Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York. The Rua family, serving Albany since 1982, now offering Neapolitan pop-up nights with their wood oven pizza. CafeCapriccio.com for information. And Honest Weight Food Co-op, Albany, local and sustainable groceries for all, featuring seasonal specialty foods, holiday catering, and zero-waste alternatives, online at honestweight.coop. Well, we've done it again. We've gotten through the week here on Vox Pop. Thanks again to Nicole Rodriguez for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls all week long. Thanks for the emails. If we didn't get to yours, you know what? Most of these topics come around again in a matter of months, years, whatever. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King screened the calls. Have a splendid weekend.